This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 1 Kings. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in 1 Kings chapter 8 with today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
Remember verse 22? Solomon began his prayer where? Standing before the Lord with his arms outstretched to the Lord. But by the time he ends his prayer, he's on his knees. The more time you spend before the Almighty God, the humbler you will become. God always drives us to our knees. And verse 54 paints a beautiful picture. The world's mightiest, the world's wisest man is on his knees before an all-wise and almighty God. Then he stood and he blessed all the assembly of Israel with a loud voice saying, "Blessed be the Lord who has given rest to his people Israel according to all that he promised. There has not failed one word of all his good promise, which he promised through his servant Moses." Not one word that God has spoken has ever failed. Do you believe that? Let me tell you, God's promises are sure. They can be trusted. When God makes a promise, you can take it to heart. You can personalize that promise. You can take it to the bank and build your life on the promises of God. Now, God has made us many precious promises, but have we taken them to heart? Are we building our lives on the promises of God? We should be. I like what C.H. Spurgeon once said. He said, "God sent the promise on purpose to be used. If I see a Bank of England note, it is a promise for a certain amount of money. And I take it and use it. But oh, I, my friend, do try and use God's promises. For nothing pleases God better than to see his promises put into circulation. He loves to see his children bring them up to him and say, 'Lord, do as you have said.' And let me tell you that it glorifies God to use his promises." Are you putting God's promises in circulation? You should be. Verse 57, "May the Lord our God be with us as he was with our fathers. May he not leave us nor forsake us." There's a promise right there to put into practice. He won't leave us or forsake us. "That he may incline our hearts to himself, to walk in all his ways and to keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments, which he commanded our fathers. And may these words of mine, with which I have made supplication before the Lord, be near the Lord our God day and night, that he may maintain the cause of his servant and the cause of his people Israel, as each day may require, that all the peoples of the earth may know that the Lord is God, there is no other. Let your heart, therefore, be loyal to our God, to walk in his statutes and keep his commandments as it is this day." And after Solomon ends his prayer, something happens. The flame gets lighted. Let me read to you a passage from 2 Chronicles chapter 7 that sort of correlates with our passage here in 1 Kings. This is what happens. "When Solomon had finished praying, fire came down from heaven and consumed the burnt offering and the sacrifices, and the glory of the Lord filled the temple. And the priests could not enter the house of the Lord because the glory of the Lord had filled the Lord's house. When all the children of Israel saw how the fire came down and the glory of the Lord on the temple, they bowed their faces to the ground on the pavement and worshiped and praised the Lord, saying, 'For he is good, for his mercy endures forever.'" God personally lights the flame. He sends fire down from heaven on the sacrifice and lights the new altar. He lights it himself with fire from heaven. What an amazing sight that was. Verse 62, "Then the king and all Israel with him offered sacrifices before the Lord. And Solomon offered a sacrifice of peace offerings, which he offered to the Lord." This is what he offered: 22,000 bulls and 120,000 sheep. Not bad. So the king and all the children of Israel dedicated the house of the Lord. It was the largest single day slaughter of blood in the history of the temple. 22,000 bulls and 120,000 sheep. That's more barbecue than we serve at our pastor's conference every year. On the same day, the king consecrated the middle of the court that was in front of the house of the Lord. For there he offered burnt offerings and grain offerings and the fat of the peace offerings, because the bronze altar that was before the Lord was too small to receive the burnt offerings, the grain offerings, and the fat of the peace offerings. The altar's first day in operation, and it's already too small. At that time, Solomon held a feast, and all Israel with him, a great assembly from the entrance of Hamath to the brook of Egypt before the Lord our God. 7 days and seven more days, 14 days. On the eighth day, he sent the people away, and they blessed the king and went to their tents joyful and glad of heart for all the good that the Lord had done for his servant David and for Israel, his people. When Moses dedicated the tabernacle, God sent fire from heaven to consume the sacrifice. When Solomon now dedicates the temple, God sends fire from heaven to consume the sacrifice. Apparently, God's grand openings always come with fireworks, evidently. But as I mentioned last week, God is at work in the world today, building a temple for himself, a spiritual house. We call it his church. He is fitting you and I. He's fitting us together as the temple of God. And guess what? On the day the church opened, on the church's grand opening in Acts chapter 2, on the day of Pentecost, what did God do? As he did with the tabernacle, as he did with Solomon's temple, he likewise sent fire down from heaven. You could see little flickers of fire hovering over the heads of the 120 that were assembled in the upper room. Again, God sent fire down on the sacrifices to dedicate his new temple. And yet, this time, it wasn't fire sent down to consume dead sacrifices, but it was fire sent to consume living sacrifices. You and me, we need to present our bodies as living sacrifices unto God. He sets us on fire, not to be carcasses, but to be witnesses. You and I need to offer our bodies to God as a living sacrifice and then be filled with the Holy Spirit and set on fire, consumed with the power of God. Well, in 1 Kings chapter 2, God paid Solomon a visit in a dream. You remember it. He granted Solomon wisdom. Now in chapter 9, God comes to Solomon again, and this time he encourages him to use the wisdom he's been given. This visitation occurs after Solomon has been king now for 2 decades. God sort of comes to him in midterm and provides a warning. And it came to pass when Solomon had finished building the house of the Lord and the king's house and all Solomon's desire which he wanted to do, that the Lord appeared to Solomon the second time as he had appeared to him at Gibeon. And the Lord said to him, I have heard your application that you have made before me. I have consecrated this house which you have built to put my name there forever, and my eyes and my heart will be there perpetually. Here there is cooperation between man and God. Notice what happens here. Man does his part and God does his part. Now, man's part is Solomon has built this temple. That's man's part. But now God has come and he's consecrated it and he's filled it with his presence. That's God's part. And whenever you have a work of God, there's always man's part and God's part. It's been said, God won't do man's part and man can't do God's part. But it takes both man and God cooperating and working together. Here Solomon builds the building, a temple, but it's now up to God to make this temple holy. F.B. Meyer writes this, man builds, God hallows. The cooperation between man and God pervades all life. Man performs the outward and mechanical, God the inward and spiritual. We must be careful to do our part with reverence and godly fear, remembering that God must work in realms we cannot touch. and to issues we cannot reach before our poor exertions can avail. There is much that we can't do, but we need to take care of the little bit of task that God has given us to do, and then God will do those miracles that are beyond our reach. Well, verse 4 tells us, "Now, if you walk before me as your father David walked, in integrity of heart and in uprightness, to do according to all that I have commanded you, and if you keep my statutes and my judgments, then I will establish the throne of your kingdom over Israel forever, as I promised David your father, saying, you shall not fail to have a man on the throne of Israel." The length of this dynasty would be up to the obedience of the kings. "But if you or your sons at all turn from following me and do not keep my commandments and my statutes which I have set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land which I have given them. And this house which I have consecrated for my name, I will cast out of my sight. Israel shall be a proverb and a byword among all peoples. And as for this house which is exalted, everyone who passes by it will be astonished and will hiss and say, 'Why has the Lord done thus to this land and to this house?' Then they will answer, 'Because they forsook the Lord their God, who brought their fathers out of the land of Egypt, and have embraced other gods and worshiped them and served them. Therefore, the Lord has brought all this calamity on them.'" Hey, the temple will honor God one way or the other. Either people will see it standing and they will praise God for his glory, or they will see it in ruins because of the king's sin, and they will marvel at God's judgment. But either way, God is going to get the glory. People are going to come and see his glory manifested in this place, either through greatness or through ruin. Verse 10, "Now it happened at the end of 20 years when Solomon had built the two houses, the house of the Lord and the king's house, Hiram, the king of Tyre, had supplied Solomon with cedar and cypress and gold as much as he desired. That King Solomon then gave Hiram 20 cities in the land of Galilee. Then Hiram went from Tyre to see the cities which Solomon had given him, but they did not please him. So he said, 'What kind of cities are these which you have given me, my brother?' And he called them the land of Kabul, as they are to this day." The word Kabul means worthless or good for nothing. "You've given me just some good-for-nothing cities." Then Hiram sent the king 120 talents of gold. Pretty good price for some good-for-nothing cities. He was disappointed with his cities, but evidently he still paid for them. Verse 15, "And this is the reason for the labor force which King Solomon raised to build the house of the Lord, his own house, the Milo, or the fortress, and the wall of Jerusalem, Hazor, Megiddo, and Gezer." Now, these were the three major cities that controlled the trade routes throughout the region. Hazor was about 3 miles north of the Sea of Galilee. It controlled the Via Maris, or the Way of the Sea, the road that ran along the Mediterranean coast from Egypt to Damascus. It cut through the Valley of Jezreel and then up by the Sea of Galilee and then on up toward Damascus. Megiddo controlled the pass that linked the coastal plain to the Galilee, and then Gezer set on the road, a different road, that linked the land of the Philistines to the city of Jerusalem. Solomon built all three of these fortress cities, and the reason was they all set at major crossroads, and it enabled Solomon to control the trade that went back and forth among the region. Now, Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had gone up and had taken Gezer and burned it with fire, had killed the Canaanites who dwelt in the city, and had given it as a dowry to his daughter, Solomon's wife. And so Solomon evidently received this city as a wedding gift. And Solomon built Gezer, Lower Beth Horon, Baalath, and Tadmor in the wilderness in the land of Judah, all the storage cities that Solomon had, cities for his chariots and cities for his cavalry, and whatever Solomon desired to build in Jerusalem, in Lebanon, and in all the land of his dominion. Now, all the people who were left of the Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, who were not of the children of Israel, that is, their descendants who were left in the land after them, whom the children of Israel had not been able to destroy completely, From these, Solomon raised forced labor, as it is to this day. The leftover Canaanites, they were used as slave labor to build Solomon's projects. But of the children of Israel, Solomon made no forced labor because they were men of servants, his officers, his captains, commanders of his chariots and his cavalry. Others were chief officials who were over Solomon's work, 550 who ruled over the people who did the work. But Pharaoh's daughter came up from the city of David to her house, which Solomon had built for her. Then he built the Milo. Now, three times a year, Solomon offered burnt offerings and peace offerings on the altar, which he had built for the Lord, and he burned incense with them on the altar, which was before the Lord. And those three times were probably the three major feasts, when all the Jews were required to come to Jerusalem, the Passover, the Feast of Tabernacles, and then the Feast of Pentecost. And so he finished the temple. King Solomon also built a fleet of ships at Ezion Geber, which is near Elath, on the shore of the Red Sea in the land of Edom. Solomon built an Israeli navy, and they were docked in one of the most beautiful places on the planet, Elat, or Elath. Today, there's a modern Israeli resort in the city of Elat down on the Red Sea. And then Hiram, one of these years when we go to Israel, I want to stop in Elat. Surely there's got to be some biblical significance. Wouldn't it be great to go down to this place and see where Solomon docked his navy? Wouldn't it that when you see those surfboards in the beach, wouldn't it be so beneficial to go down just to see where Solomon docked his navy? Wouldn't that be a spiritual experience there? Then Hiram sent his servants with the fleet, seamen who knew the sea, to work with the servants of Solomon. The Phoenicians, you remember, they were the world famous sailors, the sailors of antiquity. And so Hiram sent down his naval experts to launch Solomon's navy. And they went to Ophir and acquired 400 talents of gold from there and brought it to King Solomon. A talent, remember, weighed between 70 and 100 pounds. So on the low side, 420 talents would have been about 29,000 pounds of gold. At $400 an ounce? Well, you do the math. Now, we're not sure the location of Ophir, perhaps Arabia, maybe on the eastern coast of Africa, maybe even India. We're not sure. But the fact that Solomon was willing to build bridges of trade to such faraway destinations shows his industriousness, showed his pioneering spirit. Quite a guy. Chapter 10. Now when the queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to test him with hard questions. She came to Jerusalem with a very great retinue, an entourage, with camels that bore spices, very much gold and precious stones. Sheba today is the country of Yemen on the southern tip of the Arabian Peninsula. And I'm sure it created quite a stir, quite a buzz in Jerusalem when this large and exotic caravan pulled into town. Verse 2, when she came to Solomon, she spoke with him about all that was in her heart. And also remember verse 1, she came to test him with hard questions. So Solomon answered all her questions. There was nothing so difficult for the king that he could not explain it to her. Now these wisdoms of war wisdom episodes, these were common in ancient times. They were specifically common in Oriental courts, these sort of cerebral showdowns. One wise man would come to the court and he would try to trick another wise man, and they would sort of match wits one with the other. The Queen of Sheba had heard of Solomon's great wisdom. He was a challenge, and some women, you know, they like a challenge. And so she came a long way. She came 1,500 miles to match wits with King Solomon. According to verse 3, he got the best of her every time. And when the Queen of Sheba had seen all the wisdom of Solomon, the house that he had built, the food on his table, we studied that last week, the seating of his servants, the service of his waiters and their apparel, his cupbearers and his entryway by which he went up to the house of the Lord, there was no more spirit in her. In other words, all of his wealth took her breath away. Now, this was a key queen, mind you. She was familiar with treasure and with Sheba was a wealthy land in its own right. But her finest possessions paled in comparison to those of Solomon. She marvels in verse 6. Then she said to the king, "It was a true report which I heard in my own land about your words and your wisdom. However, I did not believe the words until I came and saw with my own eyes. And indeed, the half was not told me. Your wisdom and prosperity exceed the fame of which I heard. Happy are your men, and happier are these your servants who stand continually before you and hear your wisdom. The half was not told me," she says. And notice verse 9. Here's a vitally important point. The queen of Sheba credits Solomon's greatness to his God. Isn't this what Solomon had prayed earlier? "Lord, when the Gentiles, when they see the glory of the temple, and when they come to this place to seek you, will they know that you are the true God?" And hear his prayers being answered. Here is Old Testament evangelism at work. She says, "Blessed be the Lord your God who delighted in you, setting you on the throne of Israel. Because the Lord has loved Israel forever, therefore he made you king to do justice and righteousness." God has so blessed Israel that there is only one conclusion that can be drawn by the Queen of Sheba, and that is that Israel's God is the one true God. And if Israel had continued to walk in God's ways, this would have been God's plan of evangelism throughout the Old Testament. Verse 10, "Then she gave the king 120 talents of gold, spices in great quantity, and precious stones. There never again came such abundance of spices as the queen of Sheba gave to King Solomon." There she is, the original spice girl. Of course, Arabia was known for its spices. "Also, the ships of Hiram, which brought gold from Ophir, brought great quantities of almug wood and precious stones from Ophir. And the king made steps of the almug wood for the house of the Lord and for the king's house, also harps and stringed instruments for singers." Almug wood was probably a sandal wood. It's a red wood. It's very hard and very heavy. It's perfect for musical instruments. It would have resonance to it when you played an almug wood guitar. "There never again came such almug wood, nor has the like been seen to this day. And King Solomon gave the Queen of Sheba all she desired, whatever she asked, besides what Solomon had given her according to the royal generosity. So she turned and went to her own country, she and her servants." Now it's interesting, we're told Solomon gave the Queen of Sheba all she desired. Legend has it, that she also asked Solomon for a son, and he obliged. And the queen named their son Menelech, and he became the ancestor of all future Ethiopian kings. In fact, Menelech's dynasty lasted nearly 3,000 years until 1974, when Haile Selassie, who claimed to be a direct descendant of King Solomon, by the way, was deposed by a communist coup. Selassie went by the name the Lion of Judah. And to this day, Ethiopian Jews, who are black-skinned Jews, they're known as Falasha Jews. They all go back to this legend of King Menelech.
In today's message, Pastor Sandy continued through the book of 1 Kings. With life accelerating at a seemingly endless rate, it's easy to find yourself turning towards technology for your own routine, for support. You know in your heart that God has provided for you all along, but almost involuntarily, you begin to replace him with things of this world. King Solomon serves as a reminder to you that when your focus on God blurs and you rely on the things of this world instead, your fate is sealed. King Solomon fell when he depended on his wealth and status instead of God who had blessed him. Take time right now to thank God every day for His blessings. You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. Pastor Sandy comes to us from Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain, located in Atlanta, Georgia. Are you in the area or will you be passing by sometime soon? We would love to see you on a Sunday morning at 9:15 or 11:15. For more information, head over to our website, sandyadams.org, and select the About tab. Once again, that website is sandyadams.org. Pastor Sandy brings sound biblical teaching as he goes through the Bible verse by verse. You'll hear the truth loud and clear and learn how to stick to that truth when others around you stray. We're so glad you decided to spend your time with us here today. That's all we have for now, but be sure to come back again for more on Sandy Adams Radio.